Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm your host, Ray Graff. We'll be discussing birds today. Rich Guthrie is once again here to help answer your questions about them. A veteran birder, a former NCON specialist, and former compiler of the Catskill, New York Christmas Bird Count for the National Audubon Society, Rich is our resident avian expert. Also joining us today, a semi-regular on the program at this point, Nancy Castillo, owner of Wild Birds Unlimited in Saratoga Springs. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551. That's 1-800-348-2551. Now, you can also comment on the Vox Pop page of our website, wamc.org/voxpop. You can check in on Facebook at facebook.com/WAMC radio, tweet us at WAMC Vox Pop, or email voxpop@wamc.org. But the number to call is 1-800-348-2551. Rich and Nancy, welcome back to the show. Nice to see you.
Good to be here, Ray. Good
Thanks,
afternoon.
Ray.
So the news about the snowy owl, interesting.
Yes.
Fill us in on what happened and what is happening.
Well, the snowy owl is appropriately named. It's a beautiful, large, white owl that comes down from the Arctic in the winter. Being from the Arctic, they have this propensity to be drawn towards wide open spaces, mm-hmm. flat level open spaces. Voila. Kennedy Airport in New York City is a flat, wide open space, draws a few snowy owls. Unfortunately, you know, with this whole business about airplane collisions with birds, the Port Authority of New York decided that they were going to have to get rid of the snowy owls and undertook a campaign to shoot them.
Oh, boy.
That did not go over well.
No, it made news.
It did, and upset a lot of people who pointed out, wait a minute, Logan Airport in Boston also is a flat, wide-open area that is also attracting snowy owls, but what they do up there, they don't shoot them.
Right.
They catch them, take them someplace else, and let them go.
And so
it works.
And so what happened?
Well, there was an uproar. Not surprising. As soon as the word got out, there was a campaign to petition the Port Authority of New York. It went through various levels of government structure, and almost immediately, Port Authority backed off and said, whoa, we like Logan's idea all of a sudden.
And Nancy, I know that you were talking about the grassroots effort to stop this.
Oh, it was pretty amazing. There was a petition that was out there, and I know they were interviewing like Corey Finger of the 10,000 Birds blog site, Lillian Stokes, who's a well-known author, interviewing them, getting them involved. But this petition, I thought it was really interesting to show the power of individuals and of social media. Mm. I put a link, after I had signed the petition myself, I put a link out on my Facebook page. And I know I was contacted by the petitioner that over 100 people, you know, with my small reach,
yeah, that's terrific.
Had signed the petition as a result of that link. So it was really heartwarming to me.
Oh, that's terrific. And so it turned out to work out well. I would wonder how much food with all the paved runways, how much food a snowy owl could find at an airport.
Lots and lots and lots.
Really?
It's in between those paved runways. It's grasslands.
And so rodents and such?
A little micro, the voles.
Yeah.
V-O-L-E-S. Like open pasture of grasslands like that, and they proliferate without predators. They're just going to, you know, go wild.
Yeah,
that's why you see so many hawks along the interstate highways, because the meadow voles along the highways are doing very well, and the hawks learn this, and they find that there's easy pickings. So you see a number of red-tailed hawks along the highway.
Well, both Logan and JFK are also along water, and
yep.
the snowy owls will take ducks and other water birds as well.
What's to prevent them from coming back, though? You'll have to do this forever, yes?
Well, as it turns out, the folks at Logan learned over time that you catch them and get rid of them, they won't come back. Maybe another one will come in, another transient will come in, but the ones that they catch and put someplace else, they tag them so they know who's who, are gone. So it's the same as if you were to shoot them, except that you're giving these guys another chance and letting them be wild as they ought to be.
Terrific.
And speaking of snowy owls, you know, it's not only New York City and Boston that these birds are showing up. They're all over the place. When there's a crash of food supply in the Arctic, snowy owls come down like a wave, and they're all over the Northeast, from Minnesota to North Carolina and even Bermuda.
So why is there a crash of the food supply in the Antarctic?
It happens.
Or it's the North Pole, right? Or the
North Pole.
North Pole.
Right across Scandinavia and through Siberia.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, there's it's a cyclical thing. You have good years, and you got lots of successful owlet breeding in the Arctic. You got a surplus of owls, and then you have a crash of the food source, and then the owls disperse, come south to find food, come back to the Arctic in the spring. So it's an ebb and flow, a natural cycle of turns of events. And so bottom line is that there are snowy owls even in the listening area, and I would like to encourage people who do find or see snowy owls, number one, marvel at them because they are gorgeous birds. And then let us know, either through eBird, we can talk about that in a bit if you like, or even contacting me or Nancy through one of the networks that we can provide an email address.
And, of course, the best way to find them is to put a runway in your backyard. Yes?
Well, yeah. Or get out and look.
Okay,
they like pastures. They like. In fact, there was one in the city of Troy, New York, recently on the campus of RPI, and they do like urban areas because the cliffs of the buildings remind them of the cliffs of the Baffin Island or West Greenland or what have you. So they comfortable in the city. They're pretty much unaccustomed to seeing people, so there's not a big fear factor involved there. So, but they also like open country. You find them on a fence post along the pasture or on a hay bale or on a barn building or even in a backyard.
And one thing, too, is that if you are lucky enough to see one of these birds, keep your distance. Enjoy them from a distance. Get out the zoom lens if you want to take photos of them and take pictures from afar. These are already somewhat stressed birds that they're in the search for food, and we don't want to put any further stresses on them. So really keep your distance and enjoy them from a distance.
All right, fair enough. Let's get to the phones at 800-348-2551. We'll start with Eileen in Saugerties. Eileen.
Hi. Before I ask my question, I wanted to thank Nancy for mentioning not stressing the birds and also Rich for bringing up the idea of a more humane approach to the snowy owls. It's a shame the Port Authority and USDA and so on just go right for the gun, but I'm glad they changed their mind in this case. Now, my question was, I'm on a small hill, a semi-wooded hill in Saugerties, and I usually get a flock of goldfinches in the late winter when they're still wearing their dull winter coats, of course. But now this year, I've had them in my yard for 3 weeks already, and I just wondered, is this a climate change thing or something else going on? And I've also had, I've never ever in my life had a cedar waxwing, and for the first time this year, I had half a dozen on one day that kind of came and looked around, drank some water, and left and never came back. So I wondered, is this unusual to have cedar waxwings at all? And also about the goldfinches coming a couple of months early.
I'll talk about the cedar waxwings first and say, ask you if you have some new fruit trees or fruit-bearing bushes that are just
sadly
reaching.
No. I just have some very tall maples and a couple of oaks and fir trees. Nothing fruity at the moment, although maybe some of the weedy plants might have some seeds I don't recognize on them. But the cedars, I landed on my deck, basically, walked around, drank the water, seemed to chatter amongst themselves, and then took off, and I haven't seen them since. But they were so exquisite. I'd never seen them up close like that. They're so gorgeous.
They're gorgeous birds. And both goldfinches and cedar waxwings move around quite a bit in search of food.
So it's not odd for the goldfinches to be here a few months early?
Nope. They'll actually be around year-round. They will travel around to a lot of yards and areas in search of food. So they travel pretty widely.
And it looks like this is, getting back to cyclical incursions, the year of the American goldfinch.
Is it?
Yeah, there's been an influx of them, and as you point out, somewhat early and more numerous than usual. So,
yeah, I have at least 20 at a time.
Right, and I think that other observers will be noting that in the area as well. So there's been a wave of them that has come in. So much like the snowy owls, the tiny little goldfinches are going through the same sort of cycle.
Well, Eileen, thank you very much for the call. Let's go over to Pat in New Paltz. Hi, Pat.
Hi. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Okay.
I have a question. I live in New Paltz, and I've been having a bird feeder out pretty much from, I would say, March through early November. And I've been stopping feeding them on the theory, and I don't know if I should do this or not, I should stop or not, but I thought that if I stay around here, if I feed them in the winter, they'll stay around here and not go south. So should I feed them all year round, or should I let them go away in the winter like that?
Absolutely. Feed them year round. Most of the birds that are going to be visiting your bird feeders through the winter are year round birds anyway. Chickadees, nuthatches, titmice, your woodpeckers, your blue jays, your cardinals are year round birds anyway. So you're not stopping them from migrating. Even those that do migrate, our feeding them never stops them from leaving. They are, their migration is based upon much more scientific scientific things. So absolutely, feed them throughout the year. They don't become dependent on your feeders, but what it does do is that it gives them a better chance of being able to survive the winter.
Okay, well, thank you much. I'll fill the bird feeder today.
Yippee.
Good.
Thanks a lot, Pat. We appreciate the call. 1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. 1-800-348-2551. We'll take a short break, and we'll be back.
Support comes from Joyelle's Jewelers, Del Mar, New York, specializing in custom jewelry and repair, laser welding, designer jewelry, and gifts. Joyelle'sJewelers.com. Saratoga Health and Wellness, a fitness facility offering exercise, nutrition, personal training, and weight loss programs. SaratogaHealthandWellness.com. Edward Garbasek, Certified Financial Planner, Havokin Wealth Strategies, Wilbraham, Massachusetts. Providing customized financial retirement strategies for those approaching or in retirement. HavokinWealthStrategies.com. And Woodstock School of Art, offering holiday gift certificates for art classes in painting, drawing, sculpture, printmaking, and more. WoodstockSchoolOfArt.org for 2014 class schedule.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC. 1-800-348-2551 is the telephone number. We're doing our bird show for the month of December. Rich Guthrie is here, and Nancy Castillo, owner of Wild Birds Unlimited, also joins us today. And Nancy has a, well, you're a published author this month, eh? In Bird Watchers Digest.
I have an article in the January-February issue of Bird Watchers Digest. It's called Blind Dreams, and it's about my experiences within a blind photographing the birds in my yard, so...
Oh, interesting.
Yep.
Or as they call in Europe, a hide.
Yep.
Very nice. And you brought coffee, as you often do, and it's delicious coffee.
I'll say.
And we had a small short discussion before the program, and you brought up an interesting point. Some coffees are better for birds than others, and maybe you could explain what that means.
The coffee that I brought today is certified by the Smithsonian Migratory Bird Institute as being bird-friendly. What that means is that it is grown in a plantation that's been certified, according to their rather strict criteria, as being shade-grown.
Mm-hmm.
Now's a good time to talk about this, because there's a number of our birds that are in our backyard during the summer, like rose-breasted grosbeak and Baltimore orioles, or we might hear the song of a wood thrush, and they migrate, they leave, and we don't think about where are they when they're not here.
Yeah.
And those are birds, the ones that I named, plus many others, that are known to use shade-grown coffee plantations during their for their winter habitat. And what's been happening is that in order to satisfy our insatiable desire or need for coffee, they've been cutting down those shade-grown coffee plantations in favor of full sun-grown coffee. Grows faster, grows cheaper than shade-grown coffee. Shade-grown coffee grows slower, but it gives it a rich, rich taste. They use less pesticides. It's safer for the workers. And it leaves the habitat for some of our most favorite migratory birds.
This is terrific. This is actually called Birds and Beans Coffee, and I presume that this is available at Wild Birds Unlimited?
Absolutely.
Good stuff. And Rich Guthrie, we will talk about the Christmas bird count coming up after the 40 break, but we have so many calls.
Let's go.
Let's get back to it. Yeah, Merle in Argyle, you're up.
This is another feeding question.
Okay.
The wife likes microwave popcorn, and I know that the chickadees like oil from the oil seed, sunflower seed. Is this good or bad for the birds to give them microwave popcorn?
No problem either way. The birds are well drawn to it, and it is it appears to be rather empty calories, but there are certainly nutritional values even to the popcorn. So And
that doesn't hurt to throw it out there.
Yeah, just toss it out there, and birds will find it. And they're smart enough to know if something is not good for them, that they'll avoid it or not come back to it.
And I've been throwing it out, and I said, well, it's got oil in it, and I know that the chickadees need oil for the winter, so I was wondering if it would be good for the birds. So maybe I'll try some and see what happens.
See what happens. And as with any kind of food that gets tossed out like that, I always like to say no leftovers. And that will keep the little vermin critters away, too, after dark.
Oh, okay.
Merle, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Have a good one. 1-800-348-2551. Vox Pop on WAMC. June in Spencertown. Hi, June.
Hi, Ray. I have a question about robins. Tuesday, a flock of them flew in my yard just as if it were March 17th instead of nearly December 17th.
Right.
And they did robin-y things. They all flew together up in the tree. There's still some apples. But they seemed to be eating something, and it looked like grubs from this distance of my kitchen window away. It looked like grubs. And then later I talked to my next-door neighbor, and she said she'd seen them at her bird feeder earlier that day.
Well, robins, contrary to popular thought, do stick around all winter. What they do is they gather up in those flocks that you see, and some of them come in from far away, like Canada, and spend their winter down here as well. And you can, at various places in favorable habitat, see groups of robins numbering into the thousands as they swirl around looking from place to place to find food. And during the winter, their favorite food is berries and fruits. So if you have apple trees, they like apples.
Mm-hmm.
If you have crab apples, they like crab apples. Or on the other side, they go after red cedar berries and poison ivy berries and winter berries. So any of that fruity trees out there are big attractions for the robins and helps them right through the winter.
And the other thing
must have been it.
And the other thing that they really appreciate is a source of open water. So a heated bird bath will often draw multiple robins in there, taking baths even in the middle of winter.
Well, we have the brook out and back, but that's a little too open, maybe.
No, it isn't. They'll use that quite readily. In fact, maybe even prefer that. But if you don't have water nearby, Nancy's absolutely right about that. Water is an important ingredient, and birds like to splash around in it, even in the cold winter days.
Great. Well, thank you very much.
June, thank you very much. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Timothy and Eckerd, you're on.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My wife, Dina Falcone, and I love to feed our birds, and we ran into two uninvited guests started coming. One was wonderful, and that's the bears, and one was not wonderful, and that's the rats.
Oh.
And I noticed that the birds very often will cast maybe 60% of the seeds to the side, looking for seeds that they prefer, and those hit the ground and then attracted the rats. And I was wondering if you would have any advice around that, and if it's okay to feed the birds only in the winter and not in the summer.
As far as the food that's cast aside, one of the best ways to do that, to kind of minimize that, is to add trays to your feeders or buy feeders that have trays underneath them that catches those cast aside seeds. Sometimes birds are in search of the most heavy seed that they can find or heaviest nut that they can find or for something that they prefer. So they will cast it aside, but a tray that catches it, you know, would be probably the best way to keep the ground underneath it clean. Do your duty also as a bird feeding landlady and landlord, and keep that ground underneath the feeders just as clean as you can by raking up the debris. That'll help minimize that as well.
And the other thing is that the type of bird seed that you use might be a factor here as well. Once again, birds look for the most nutritious, beneficial food. And unfortunately, a lot of the bird seed that's sold in the supermarkets and some of the garden centers is not appropriate. It's just filler-type feed that birds recognize and toss aside, looking for the more nutritious stuff that you'll find in the better-quality bird seed packages.
How about just 100% sunflower seeds?
Perfect.
Okay.
That would be fine. The birds love variety, but that would be fine. And but before we leave, I do want to address your other visitor. If you do have a bear visiting your bird feeders, you are they should be hibernating by now. But when you do have a bear visiting your feeders, the best thing to do is to really take that feeder down at least at night. You've heard it's kind of cliche, but a fed bear is a dead bear, and to remove the food sources that are easily available to them, whether it's bird feeders or cat food outside or garbage cans that are easy to get into.
Yeah.
You want to remove those food sources if you do have a bear visiting.
And relative to the bear is hibernating now. That's why I decided that maybe we would feed them only in the wintertime. And that's my follow-up question. Is it okay to feed the birds only in the winter and hope that, during the summer production, there's enough other stuff to sustain them?
Yeah, that works. Winter bird feeding is, of course, a very popular activity, and summer bird feeding can be equally entertaining. However, as you point out, there's plenty of other ample food supply out there, and also the bear question is a consideration.
But they won't end up being dependent. In other words, they'll find their own way regardless.
Absolutely. Even winter or summer, the birds have street smarts that get them. They can move around and find an alternate source of food if they need to.
Okay. Timothy, thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate the call. Vox Pop on WAMC. 1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Craig in Boston Lake. Craig, you're on.
Well, thank you so much. It's interesting opening of the show. They talked about the snowy owls. Well, good for, Boston, and too bad, boo-hoo, for the Port Authority of New York, which seems to be, a chance for me to say politically they will shoot by anything they want to.
Well, they changed their
tune. Yeah, they caught on in a hurry.
Well, God bless them.
They got smart in a hurry.
Yeah, God bless them. I think things are changing with that authority. But that only leads up to my real question here. Where in the area, say, of Saratoga County or even outside of that, are the best places to take hurt birds? There used to be a couple little sanctuaries where these elderly people would take care of them and fix them up if they had a broken wing or what have you. Do we still have any of those around?
Yes, we do. The licensed wildlife rehabilitators are found around the state. You can go to in New York State, you can go to the DEC website. And there you will find a link to wildlife rehabilitators that are licensed by the state and the federal government to do just what you say. And
oh, wonderful! Now, how about if you don't have a website thing? You're not,
You can call the regional office of the state Environmental Conservation Department, and there you'll just have to be patient.
Navigate around until
exactly.
somebody can tell you.
Yes.
Great, but there are these things around still.
Oh, yes, they definitely
are.
They're
wonderful.
Dedicated people who spend a lot of time and their own personal money. They don't get reimbursed.
Yes,
for this
I understand that. Yeah, well,
yeah, they do a good service.
Craig, especially
wonderful.
Since you're from Boston Lake, when we get calls for injured that somebody's saying, what can I do with an injured bird? The organization that we refer them to is North Country Wild Care. They have a hotline. Unfortunately, I don't have the number with me, but it's called North Country Wild Care. They have a hotline, and they have people that specialize in rehabilitating birds. In fact, we had one in our store just yesterday was just bringing a bird home from the vet, a hairy woodpecker that had struck a window and had like a broken
mm-hmm.
jaw. And
yeah.
She was taking him to be rehabilitated. So they are out there, and like I said, we work with North Country Wild Care, and they do a great job.
All right, Craig, thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate the call. So. Regarding rehabilitation, if a bird breaks a wing, no amount of rehabilitation will have that bird flying again, right?
Well, yes, they can. Bird wings can be fixed.
Really?
A broken bone can be repaired. And, it's not easy. Bird bones are very fragile. However, on the other hand, some birds that do have that injury that will keep them from being let out in the wild again, can serve a very valuable role in education.
Mm-hmm.
I know
mm-hmm.
Some of the rehabilitators and educational institutions will have birds that cannot be released back to the wild that serve as, number one, in some cases, They bring them around for lecture series to various schools and organizations. And also, inside a rehab center, a bird that is accustomed to being there can act as a calming effect for a wild bird that is brought in and needs a little company to calm it down.
Very interesting. I never knew such places existed. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. We are talking about birds, as you may have guessed. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie is here and Nancy Castillo to answer your questions. Tara in Chilson.
Hello.
Oh, boy. Did we lose you?
Oh, no.
No.
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, go ahead.
I live in between Newport and Rosendale. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the area. I noticed last April they had an alert on the television. They were going to be doing spraying for mosquitoes. And ever since then, I have had no squirrels in my yard. And I know it's a bird shelled, and I do put up my bird feeders, and that was my problem, that the squirrels were taking over. And now they're gone. There's been like two squirrels all summer long in my yard. Do you know anything about what that would be?
Well, I doubt very much there's a connection between the mosquito program and the squirrels.
So I
cannot connect the dots in that story. Where the squirrels went, I don't know. There may, you know, again, there are cycles in nature, and they may be on the low end of their cycle in your neighborhood, which I believe is Tilson, New York.
Correct.
Oh, it says Chilson on the sheet. Oh, thank you for catching that, Rich. I appreciate it.
Something that could also...
I thought maybe you might have known something or heard of other squirrel populations in the area going down.
Not in my neighborhood, then.
Yeah. And the other thing that could impact the squirrel population in your yard is the introduction of a predator, a cat that kind of specializes, for example, in, you know, squirrels and chipmunks and, you know, well, they also eat birds and, you know, capture birds. So perhaps a new cat came into your yard.
Well, all right, well, thank you very much.
I appreciate it. Thanks for the call. 1-800-348-2551. Krista in Great Barrington, how are you doing?
I'm fine, thank you. Actually, this is perfect timing. My question is about my mom last year had a snow bunting at her feeder that hung out underneath the hemlock, and the neighbor's domestic cat sadly killed it. But this year, another snow bunting has arrived, and I was wondering if there are any sprays or any kind of deterrents that she could use around her feeder during the winter to keep the cat away.
Unfortunately, no. Cats are drawn to cats should be indoors. That's the bottom line, and it's unfortunate that it's a neighbor's cat because that lessens your level of control over the cat's whereabouts and behavior. And snow buntings, probably from where they come down from the Arctic, just like the snowy owl, and they're probably not on guard to be wary of backyard cats that will find them easy prey. It's very unfortunate in that respect.
It is. It's a beautiful little bird. And the other thing I wanted to mention, my niece found an osprey that had been shot in Millerton, New York, and she called the Sharon, Connecticut Audubon Center, and they successfully rehabilitated it and just released it recently, a beautiful adult osprey. So they're also a good resource for rehabilitating birds.
That's correct. And each of the, you know, in any of the jurisdictions in the listening area, the appropriate environmental department, a DEP or environmental conservation, will have contacts with and in fact have jurisdiction over the wildlife rehabilitators, and they nowadays they take a very strong interest in maintaining a good rapport and working relationships. So I would encourage anybody that comes across that, if they don't know of a center nearby, to contact the wildlife agency in their area.
Okay, well, thank you very much. This is a great show. I'm really enjoying it.
Krista, thank you very much. And Nancy Castillo is our guest. Also, Rich Guthrie. Birds today on Vox Pop, 1-800-348-2551. Michelle in Mount Tremper, how are you?
Hi. I have a quick question. I saw a wonderful recipe for ornaments, Christmas ornaments, to put outside made from bird seed. And I wondered if they were safe because they contained corn syrup and gelatin.
Sure. I would say so. Yes. But there are other formulas that you can use. There are recipes that are available that consist of things like peanut butter and suet and birdseed that you can whip up at home and create into little ornaments or figurines or what have you and put them outside.
Oh, perfect. I'll look that up. Thank you, Rich.
You're welcome.
We had a pine cone which had, I think, peanut butter and birdseed.
Yes.
And one of my kids brought it home.
Yep.
We put it outside by the kitchen window, and it was great. The birds came for it, and then the squirrels came for it. So the birds would get their feed, they'd go away, and then the squirrels would be all over it.
Well, that's true. Squirrels like birdseed. A couple of ways of dealing with that is to put it out of reach of the squirrels, either on a longer string that the squirrels can't come down.
Sadly, the planning committee didn't think about that.
Oh, no. Right. Yeah. Oh, well, but it works, and it's easily recreated so that once it's dry and empty, you can put some more out there.
It really is a terrific way if you want to watch birds just sort of casually out your window.
Yes.
It's a great way to do it.
And it's a fun family activity to sit around and make these things at home. I know I've helped out with various Boy Scout scouting groups and helped them put together bird seed feeders.
1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Rich Guthrie is here. Nancy Castillo, we hit the home stretch on The Bird Show coming up.
Support comes from Boyden & Perrin, Amherst, Massachusetts, providing foreign and domestic car, truck, and SUV repair services and a Massachusetts inspection station for over 50 years. BoydenAndPerrin.com. The Unitarian Universalist congregations in the Capital Region and beyond, where people gather together to nurture spirit and help heal our world. CapitalRegionUU.org. Smith College Museum of Art, presenting second Friday, December 13th from 4 to 8 p.m., featuring activities for children and adults, and the exhibit River of Gold, Pre-Columbian Treasures from Sitio Conti, smith.edu/artmuseum. And Proctors, presenting the African Children's Choir Christmas Show, December 20th in the GE Theater, proctors.org.
Vox Pop on WAMC, 1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number as we hit the lightning round here with about 18 minutes left to go in the program, maybe 17. Rich Guthrie, the Christmas bird count is coming, yes?
Yeah, here we are, Christmas season, and this Saturday is the beginning of the Christmas bird counts. Mm. You know, it's not all on Christmas Day, it's during a Christmas period, and I encourage anybody who has been out on a Christmas bird count or not, to get in touch with your local Audubon or environmental group and nature center and find out where there's a Christmas bird count in your neighborhood and get out there and join them. You could go to audubon.org.
How does one do this? If you're in a group, how do you avoid double counts? Say I go out there and I count 12, you count the same 12.
Then you have 24? No.
Yeah,
you have 12.
All right.
And there's you work cooperatively, and the count compiler will separate groups so that there's no overlap, so there's no intrusion, and you count the birds in your area, and everybody is, it's usually a group of 3 to 5 people in one group.
I see.
And so you see there's 12 over there, they say that's 12. There's 12 over there, that's either the same 12 or another 12.
Well, yeah, what if that 12 flew over to Rich's area?
Well, there are ways of sorting that out.
I see.
And
I see.
Those kinds of vagaries are built into the system. Over more than 100 years of data gathering, that kind of error is built into the system
so
that it can be statistically accommodated over time.
Understood. And you're also going to Nicaragua.
Oh, yeah, in March with the North River Environmental Center out of Burlington, Vermont.
Mm-hmm.
We're going down in March. And if you want any information about that, visiting shade-grown coffee plantations.
Oh, really?
Just to see for ourselves and to learn about and to also help with the kids and their education down there. Because we do work with the school systems down there to bring a little bit for the kids that are the children of the plantation pickers.
Amazing.
This will be coming up in March. If you want any information, you can get in touch with me to join us on this trip. It's very exciting.
All right. How does one get in touch with Rich Guthrie?
My email, right. richardpguthrie@gmail.com.
And Guthrie is spelled G-U-T-H-R-I-E.
That is correct.
All right. Before we get back to the phones, we have one from, it looks like an email here, from Jake. I'd like to attract crows to my yard as I love to watch their interactions. They're a very smart group of birds. How can I do this?
Easy. Bread. I use bread. And okay. I have crows that they see me from a half a mile away and they come in. I mean, it's the same six or eight of birds, usually about four to six.
Yeah.
And they know me. The American crow comes in during the wintertime and the fish crow comes in during the summertime. And they're quite happy, and I keep them happy with that. And when I have some, let's say, some leftover suet, I just crumple that up and bring that out to them. They're more happy with that about that. And I also give them dry dog food, little pellets, you know, little kibbles and bits, that kind of thing.
All right, great.
And it's nutritious, and once again, they appreciate it, and they'll come in from a distance.
All right, let's go to the phones. Lynn in Shelburne Falls is on. Hi, Lynn.
Hi, Ray. Hi, Rich and Nancy, you've probably heard them before. And now, not so long, I have a couple questions.
I'm sorry.
But I would, no, I'm not going to. No. I want to know about that Shade Coffee, where that Shade Grown Coffee place that Nancy was talking about I should go to.
Oh, well, you can get it at Wild Birds Unlimited, yeah?
Yep.
It's Birds and Beans Coffee, and I tell you, it's delicious.
Birds and Beans.
Yeah.
Okay, now, not to elaborate too much, I would like to know about the bird backyard count. I couldn't go on a walk on the Christmas count, so I want to know about the backyard count, and I haven't quite... I was online today, and my darn thing is a virus, and it's so hard to find out things.
Okay, well, that's a good point. That comes up in February of each year, or January.
Yep. February,
that's right. And it's sponsored by Cornell University. You can go online to the Cornell... Cornell University, Lab
Cornell
of Ornithology.
Lab. Or search for Great Backyard Bird Count. It's always the four-day period over President's Day weekend, so Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
That's it.
But they gave me a 2011 bird count. Anyway, so next, don't elaborate on this too much, but I have an owl in my back. I sleep outside, you know, all winter long, and I hear these noises out there that don't bother me, but... usually in the summertime, I've got a barred owl, you know, you know, kind of thing.
Good
and,
for you.
And I'm not sure what they say in the winter.
Same thing. They don't change their song.
Oh, well, what's doing that then? Is there a...
There may be
what other owl?
A great horned owl. Hoo, 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 hoo.
No, it's like a hoo.
Yeah, that'd be the barred owl. That's very good for barred owl, and... either one of them could be the great horned owls are actually setting up their territory now, and your barred owls may be doing the same thing.
Oh my goodness!
That's
wonderful.
That kind of gawl is they will talk to each other that way. So you might hear that sound coming from two different areas as they kind of have a conversation with each other.
I talk to them too. I don't do it quite right.
Well,
snow buntings. I have a little tiny thing I could say about snow buntings and. I've never seen them more than in a pasture, you know, huge bunch of snow bunnies. But what I would do is what I do with my bird feeders. I've got old cats, but what I do is I put a 1 foot fence around the bottom of bird feeders, and, you know, the cats have got to jump over it. And so everything that's in there can see them jumping very fast.
Okay,
the other thing
good
is
idea.
My only question was about my bird bath, and I got a concrete bird bath. And it seems to be leaking somehow. I've had it for a long time, and the first year I've heated it, but I feel it's going down. Is there some way to seal it that's safe?
Oh, in other words, the water level is going down. You need to seal it. Is that correct?
Yes.
I see. And so something safe for the birds to seal.
I don't know. Because I don't know the nature of these sealants that are out there.
All right. So maybe you...
Well, I've got an aquarium sealant.
Oh, well, I don't know what the chemical composition of that is. And, you know, I would say just, you know, refill it.
Keep refilling it.
Yeah, and keep it clean and refill. That'll work.
Lynn,
you said you
a
have
lot.
A heater in it this now?
Oh, we lost Lynn. I'm sorry to say. Okay. I apologize. Let's go to Pete in Albany. Pete.
Good afternoon. I'm wondering what happened to all the nighthawks. When I was a kid, at dusk, you'd see and hear these nighthawks going this sort of before it got dark.
You're right, and we're wondering too. It's a mystery. We don't know what's happened to them, and you're absolutely right. It was a delightful thing to witness during the summer months, even in downtown cities from Albany, Schenectady, Pittsfield, Springfield. They're gone. Yeah.
They used to have, like, these two lines under their wings. They were beautiful birds.
Absolutely. And
are they somewhere else?
No.
They're gone.
They simply disappeared from the urban scene in the Northeast. There are plenty of them in the more rural areas, let's say out west in the prairies. Our backyard nighthawks are a thing of the past. And
I'm originally from Hudson Falls, and they're not there anymore either.
Exactly, not anywhere. But we do get some that come down from, let's say, the pine areas up north of us, but they're not the ones that we find in the summertime.
Yeah, that's very interesting.
Yeah, it's a mystery.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
You're welcome, Pete.
Now, you've spoken before about, over the period of decades, birds going one place and then coming back decades later. So this could be a natural...
It could be, but I don't think that's the case with the nighthawks. I think there's something more insidious going on with them, and
what
it might have
be?
Something to do with the environment in our cities that was once attractive to them, and now it's not.
Something that's changed in the last 30 to 40 years?
Yes.
What would that be?
Maybe
pollution is less.
Night lighting is taking its toll on the insects that they feed on. You know, those moths, those big Cecropia moths that used to fly around during the night, which is their main source of food, may now be extirpated from the city environment. Or perhaps it's all those crows that came to the city, that learned to live in the city, that are now raiding the nighthawk nests. Or it could be the change in the rooftop materials that we used to use, gravel on tops of roofs that the nighthawks found as suitable nesting environments. Now they're tarred over, and that's not suitable.
Yeah. Sylvia in Napanock. Sylvia, you're on.
Hi. Yes, I was calling because we have seen in the past 2 weeks twice pileated woodpecker. And I want to know how we can keep him around, or is that unusual that he would be here in the first place?
Well, not that unusual, because the pileated or pileated, depending on where you're all from, has become very quite adapted to our more suburban backyard environment. And their numbers have increased. Their tolerance level for people presence has increased. And so they are more present than what they used to be. So I think there's not much you can do to keep them there other than to plant foods that they like. And, poison ivy is one of their favorites. But I don't encourage that. They'll find there's plenty of stuff out there for them to find on their own. Mm-hmm. But other than that, they like standing dead trees and, in fact, even fallen dead trees. But mm-hmm. Just enjoy them. And if the other woodpeckers will be drawn to suet. If you have suet cakes in the yard.
Yeah, the other woodpeckers that we have, that they come to our bird feeder that we put the black seed, the sunflower seeds in.
Right. The red-bellied woodpecker has, curiously enough, found that bird feeders work, and they will come and take bird seed. Mm-hmm. And I find that they like black oil sunflower seed and crack mm-hmm. corn almost equally as well.
And while I can't say you put out a suet feeder and a pileated woodpecker will come to it, but we do have a number of customers that have been successful getting pileated woodpeckers at their suet feeders. Mm. Probably what is most key is that the pileated woodpecker is a huge bird. It's 17 to 18 inches tall.
Yeah.
It needs a big feeder to support its mass. So, a feeder that's big enough to be able to accommodate them, as opposed to a 5-inch downy woodpecker they can come to suet. Again, I would shoot for a big suet feeder and able to, in order to accommodate
17 inches?
Mm-hmm.
You're a buffet table for a bird that big.
Yeah.
Well, all right.
Okay.
Sylvia.
I had one other question. We had two pair of bluebirds that were checking out our bluebird house, but then they seemed to move on.
Bluebirds are like that. They can be finicky that way.
Okay.
You just might take a look at where they, if this is a repeated behavior from year to year, then you might want to check where you have the bluebird nest boxes located.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, bluebirds, I've had that happen in my yard as well, where they'll come, looks good, then they're gone. something just didn't quite meet her criteria, and she's the one that does the choosing. So,
Sylvia, thanks a lot for the call. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Rich Guthrie is here. Nancy Costello is here. You're there. And Aaron in Saugerties is here. Hi, Aaron.
Hi. I work on a farm in Saugerties, and I have a question for you about some of the pigeons that we have there that have been behaving a little strangely lately. They seem to have difficulty walking, and they're not as coordinated when flying. We had one that we found that had a fever and another one that we found that seemed to be having a seizure. And I was just wondering if you had any ideas what may be causing that and if it's something to worry about for our bird population, our chickens and ducks. And
yeah, worry. That what's causing that is probably some pesticide that they picked up along the way. Those sounds like they sound like the symptoms of pesticide ingestion.
Oh,
and I would worry about that. They're getting it from some source down there. Your domestic birds, if they're within reach of that same source, could it be affecting them, and it could also be affecting the wild birds, especially if there's a hawk in the area. A hawk will pick up on a bird that's acting strangely like that and readily go after it. And, you know, just hate to see that, that whatever the malady is to be passed on to a raptor.
Right.
So...
Sorry, God.
No, I was just, you know, once again, it may have something to do with a pesticide or a chemical that's in the bird seed or in the feedlot.
Okay. Thank you so much. Is there anyone that I should contact about that?
If you're in the Saugerties area, the State Environmental Department down there in New Paltz will have information about contacting the state pathologist who could assist you in determining the cause and perhaps lead to a remedy to the problem.
Well, thank you so much. You gave me a good place to start.
Oh, good.
Aaron, thank you very much for the call. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Jessica in New Paltz is on. Jessica.
Hi. Yesterday I was very excited when I looked out my study window to see a golden-crowned kinglet, and I have never seen them here in the wintertime. And looked it up and read that they actually can winter over. They snuggle in tight, I guess, in tree limbs.
Golden-crowned kinglets are one of the more delightful little birds that we have in our area. They're tiny, tiny little things, just a little bit bigger than the hummingbirds. And
yeah,
I'll put a little picture up here, Ray. Can you see that little guy over here?
I see upper right.
Tiny little guy with a little golden crown.
I see bottom right. Yeah, sure.
And a few of them will stick around through the winter. And they usually will retreat to a more sheltered area, but that you have one in your backyard is just sort of evidence that they are there. That's one of the bird species that we look for on our Christmas bird counts. We expect to find a few of them here, there, and now and then.
Well, we recently moved to a home that's surrounded by woods, so we're delighted to see more birds than in our past home. I'm curious what they would be eating at this point in the year, because normally they eat insects.
Yep,
and
that's,
is there anything I can do to encourage it?
Well, no. They'll be looking around, probing around for spider eggs and insect larvae that may be in the interstices of the bark in the trees near you. And on occasion, they will find suet. If they ever find a suet, they'll be drawn to it. But it's very rare that they'll come to find suet readily. It's not like the chickadees that can somehow, I don't know, they seem to sniff it out. But kinglets don't, you know, they're out there, and they may luck on it. And once they do, they're hooked.
Jessica, we're just about out of time. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And thank you to everybody. Okay, contact information. Nancy Costello, how do we, first of all, you have a website, yes?
We have a website. It's www.wbu.com/Saratoga Springs. WBU standing for Wild Birds Unlimited.
Gotcha. So. And Rich, you still have that blog of yours?
TimesUnion.com, Slant Birding, and Richard P. Guthrie at gmail.com.
And I assume that if someone emails you with just looking for contact information for the Christmas bird count, you can put that person in touch with the right
Absolutely.
Folks.
Absolutely. Or any questions or photographs of birds I want to identify, or snowy owls they want to tell us about. Oh, they're good things.
Well, that was a fun show.
Ears.
Thanks to both of you for coming in, and thanks to everybody who called in today. I apologize if you were left on the line. And support comes from the Preservation League of New York State, Albany, New York, protecting New York's historic buildings, districts, and landscapes since 1974. PreserveNYS.org. Marshall & Sterling, insurance for business, home, auto, bonds, group benefits, and financial planning since 1864. Our people are your best insurance offices in Glenville and Hoosick Falls, marshallsterling.com. Spectrum 8 Theaters, Albany, New York, showing Hollywood, American independent and foreign films, and presenting London's National Theater Series in HD and digital sound. Open daily, spectrum8.com. At Adelphi University Hudson Valley Center, a master's in social work, working to prepare students with the knowledge and skills to serve diverse populations in their communities. Adelphi.edu/Hudson Valley. Thanks again for being with us on Vox Pop. Thanks to Zachary T. Malloy, our engineer. Thanks to our interns, Patrick Garrett and Blaze Bryant, for answering the phones. Tom Jobe, our web whiz. It says whiz right here. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein. Marshall, I'm Ray Graff. Moyers & Company tomorrow at this time. And then on Monday at 2, it's Medical Monday. Alan Chartok will be back in the saddle. And Dr. Jenny Michaels is the guest. She'll return to talk about addiction and psychiatry. Stay tuned right now, boys and girls, for a news update.